Okay, there are only two things you need to know in order to enjoy this next report. The first is that today is Columbus Day. The other is that Columbus was Italian. Just keep those facts in mind, and Renee Montaigne brings you all the rest.
No matter how you say it, shout it, or sing it, Italian is beautiful.
Questo quello per me pari solo a quant'altre d'intorno, d'intorno mi vedo.
Even when it isn't sung, the Italian language sounds like music, which is one of the reasons it's used to tell musicians how to play. Presto, lento, adagio, forte, Italian words all, and so many others. Aria, sonata, cantata, concerto. It's the type of thing you just take for granted, unless, of course, you're Miles Hoffman, our good friend and author of the NPR Classical Music Companion, and he joins us in our studio today. Happy Columbus Day, Miles.
Thank you, Renee.
We know Italian is a gorgeous language. Could it be that simple as to why most of these musical terms are in Italian?
It's not unrelated, Renee. I mean, here we are on Columbus Day. If we say in English, 1492, that's fine. But in Italian, it's 1492.
Oh.
Which, you know, that sounds a lot nicer, I think. But in fact, so many of these musical forms started in Italy. So the original names for the forms were in Italian. The original names for the dynamic markings, they were all in Italian. Plus, Italian musicians were in positions of prestige all over Europe. So it became the lingua franca.
You know, you mentioned dynamic markings. Tell us exactly what that means. Obviously, in its grossest sense, it means loudness and softness.
That's right. And the indications that composers use in the music are relative indications. So that, for example, forte means loud. Piano means soft. Mezzo piano means half soft or kind of soft. Now, Italians have all sorts of endings that they can add to words. So, for example, for three pianos, it's pianissimo. For four pianos, it's pianississimo.
And goes so on from
and so
there.
Forth.
Into
right.
The...
or forte, fortissimo, fortissimo. Now, I think we should listen to a very neat example from Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony. We go from a section that is marked first with three pianos, then four pianos, then five pianos, and now six pianos, pianississimo. But step back, Renee. So from as soft as you can possibly play to very loud.
Fortissimo.
Right.
But who decides? Obviously, either you start at one level of, let's say, softness. Who decides where that is, where the jumping off point is?
This is a matter of interpretation, Renee. Forte is louder than piano, but one person's forte may be louder than somebody else's forte. And many composers leave things intentionally a little vague because they want interpreters to interpret. They want the performers to decide and to bring the music to life.
When you get into tempo markings, some of these are also very expressive. Allegro, con brio. Fast with verve.
Mm-hmm.
There are even tempo markings to denote feelings like friendly, majestic.
Right.
You're a professional violist. Can you do friendly? And is that different than con brio?
Well, yeah. I mean, you certainly use those indications as clues. You might find this one interesting, Renee. The 20th century composer Ernest Bloch, he marked the second movement of his first piano quintet, Andante Mistico.
How one achieves this, because it does have that shimmery, mysterious quality.
You choose a different bow stroke, you play lighter with a different bow sound, and you do everything within your power to make the music match the idea and ideal that you have in your mind.
Now, there are even a few markings, what you might call preemptive phrases, which seem to warn the musician.
Well, again, they're qualifiers, so very often you'll see allegro ma non troppo. Allegro, but not too much. One of my favorites is a humorous marking that Mozart used for the last movement of one of his flute quartets. He marked the movement Allegretto grazioso, ma non troppo presto, però non troppo adagio, così così con molto garbo ed espressione.
And the musician is supposed to think?
A graceful allegretto, but not too fast, but not too slow, so-so with lots of elegance and expression. And it's all a big joke.
Let's finish this conversation with a word that drives you a bit crazy, crescendo. It's misused quite commonly.
It is misused more often than any other musical term, Renee. People use crescendo to mean climax. They say the battle reached a shattering crescendo or the senator's speech reached a crescendo. You cannot reach a crescendo. A crescendo is a getting louder, and it may be a getting louder from very soft to not so soft, or from moderately loud to very loud, but it is a process. It is not an arrival point.
Let me ask you to suggest a piece of music that would embody the true meaning of crescendo.
Okay. It's the transition from the third to the fourth movements of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. It's one of the great passages in the history of music. Okay, so here we are on this kind of spooky pianissimo. And here comes the crescendo. And there we've arrived at one of the great moments.
And now it's time to say goodbye.
After we've just arrived. Okay.
Just arrived saying goodbye. Miles Hoffman is Morning Edition classical music commentator. But you also have, Miles, a new title.
I do indeed.
Dean of the Petrie School of Music at Converse College.
And that's in Spartanburg, South Carolina, Renee.
Miles Hoffman speaking with her own Renee Montaigne. She took off this Columbus Day, but couldn't help but send us this celebration of Italian. A list of the music you heard is at npr.org, along with this holiday question, who really discovered the new world anyway? It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Deborah Amos.